New Thinking Aloud is a non-profit endeavor. Your contributions to the New Thinking Aloud Foundation make a meaningful difference in our ability to produce new videos. You can now download a free PDF copy or purchase a beautiful printed edition of Issue 5 of the New Thinking Aloud magazine.
Thinking Aloud. Conversations on the leading edge of knowledge and discovery with psychologist Jeffrey Mishlove.
Hello and welcome. I'm Jeffrey Mishlove. Today, we'll be exploring the topic of neurodiversity, and in particular, looking at the question of two persons inhabiting one body. I'm with Annika and Tristan, who have come to Albuquerque to be with me from some distance. And Annika and Tristan have requested that I not even mention their last names because there's some concern for their safety. We're dealing with a relatively rare phenomenon, but a phenomenon that is completely human. Welcome, Annika and Tristan.
Thank you so much for having us, Jeffrey.
Yes, thank you. We appreciate it.
It's a pleasure to be with you. I should let our viewers know that you're here in my little studio in Albuquerque. You're going to be here for a few days. We're going to have a chance to go into great depth, I expect, over your life story, your individual life stories, and how it has come about that the two of you seem to be sharing a single body. But for now, rather than reveal everything all at once and go into your life histories and your story, I'd like to focus on the question of what it's like actually sharing a body.
Sounds great.
Yeah, we'd be happy to go into all the details.
Okay. I appreciate it. But we're going to need to establish a few biographical facts. For example, Annika came into this body when Tristan was 22 years old.
That's correct. I was 22 years old, and then Annika entered my body through a process, and eventually she grew and grew as a soul, as a consciousness, and eventually took over the body from me, and then she took over, and I ended up gone for a while, and then she had the body on her own for a bit, and then I came back. Mm-hmm. So now we're together. Yep.
We should also establish the fact, Tristan, that the body has been transitioned. During the period of time when you vanished for about 5 years and Annika was in sole possession of the body, she went through a gender transition.
That's correct. So it was about 8 years after, so it was around age 30 as far as the body. I took it over, and then it didn't reflect my soul, and so I ended up changing the body to better reflect who I am as a person.
And then after an absence of some 5 years, Tristan returned.
Yep, that's right. After 5 years, I kind of experimented things with altered states of consciousness, and then all of a sudden he came back, and we had to deal with the reality of being two people, two souls, sharing a body. And that's how we've lived ever since.
And how long ago was that?
That was 2021, so it's been about three years or so.
So for 3 years, you've been, you could say, cohabiting.
Yes. And we also cohabited the body before when I first entered his body, and we cohabited for about 8 years. Mm-hmm. But we were very much unaware of what was going on and kind of in denial about it. So then after Tristan came back and I had gone through all of like the spiritual work and all the understandings that I needed to go through, when he came back, it was very much, we understood our situation, we had to deal with the reality of it, and so that's what led to today.
Now, I can attest, I've been with you now for quite a few hours, and I've known you now for many weeks.
Mm-hmm.
You seem to be a well-integrated dual person.
Yes, yes. We're pretty good.
and you seem to be comfortable with yourselves, but it wasn't always this way.
No. It was definitely not always this way. I struggled with it a lot as a materialist and as an atheist. I grew up in a very scientific and engineering sort of household.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really believe in souls. I didn't really believe. I thought that, you know, you die and that's it. But then Annika kind of changed all of that for me, not in a way of where I changed beforehand, but I had to deal with the reality. The data changed. I had to deal with the fact that there was somebody sharing my body with me. I had to deal with the fact that she could just take the body and go and do things with it that, you know, that I didn't want to do. I've been a lifelong vegetarian, for example, and she's not so much. And that has been a really hard thing to adapt to. So, yeah. It's been a process. It's been a learning process for the both of us.
Along the way, for example, you sought psychiatric help.
Yes, I did. We've been through therapists. We've been through the medical system. And frankly, the medical system doesn't really know what to do with us because we are such a rare and unique case. And they think it's some sort of dissociative identity disorder, but at the same time, we don't have some of the hallmarks that maybe describe it, such as only switching when there's triggering and things like that. So, yeah, we've been through the system and they don't know what to make of us either. So we ended up realizing that we had to do this alone. We had to figure this out as we went, and we didn't really have as much help as we would have liked for there to be for people like us.
And it's also fair to say that along the way, you've encountered a few other people who are in a similar situation.
Yes, it's actually probably a lot more common than people think, because I have run into a lot of people who are sharing bodies or in multiple soul situations. Some don't just have two, some have many more. And also see themselves as this is sort of a spiritual matter. This is a matter of souls. And some people, trade the body kind of like halfway through life. And there's even a word for it. There's like walk-ins. So even in sort of spiritual literature, there's been talk about this for ages. And so, but mostly we hide because of our fear for repercussions, hate and employment and everything else. We basically just hide in society. But, you know, things are changing now and we want to be more open about this experience because it is really important for humanity as a whole to understand that consciousness is a lot more complicated than what scientists have traditionally thought.
Mm-hmm. Obviously.
Yes, obviously.
As a parapsychologist, I've been dealing with that for the last half a century.
Yeah, absolutely.
But your situation, even for myself as a parapsychologist, and I've interviewed so many psychologists who have dealt with what used to be called multiple personality, and so on, it's still a head scratcher.
Yeah, that was the interesting thing is going through the medical system, even doctors were kind of hush-hush about it because some doctors don't believe that it's even a real thing. They think that the person's either making it up or that they're acting or something like that, which isn't the case. We actually have to contend with the situation. We have to deal with it. We don't have the luxury of believing or not believing. We wake up and immediately we have to coordinate sharing the body. We have to coordinate life and who wants to do this and who wants to do that. So the medical system is definitely behind the times, or at least in the dark ages, when it comes to matters of consciousness, because there is that prevalent materialistic sort of approach in society that doesn't quite explain consciousness.
We're going to go into your personal histories in a different interview, but what I would like to focus on today is the process that you went through from a time when everything seemed chaotic and disjointed and you didn't know what was going on to the level of satisfaction and integration and balance and coordination that you've achieved after, I guess would be fair to say, years of struggle.
Yeah, years of struggling. Even initially we were, I mean, when I came back after 5 years, we didn't know how long we were going to live. We were actually afraid that we were probably going to die and it wasn't going to take long, like maybe a month or two, because of how jarring, how difficult just living day to day was. We ended up getting like anti-choking devices and putting them in every room because one of the first challenges we faced was choking on food. One person would be eating, the other person wouldn't realize because they were out of the body. They'd step in and immediately start laughing or talking, and the food would get sucked down the windpipe. So there were very real physical concerns that we had and challenges that we had to overcome, including like making rules and stuff. Like we had to make rules and kind of like navigate this and say, you know, if someone's eating or is about to eat, like you can't switch the body. It's like we had to navigate this both on a personal level and on a physical level.
How do you do that? How do you know who's going to be in charge of the body at any given moment?
We don't. It's sort of like you can kind of feel them coming in. And so you feel this sense that something is moving into you or moving through you. And then that's usually a sign, okay, I should let go of the body and give it to them. And so it's this very sort of almost like being tapped on the shoulder, but instead it's a full body sensation. And then I, you know, give the body to her, which he just did. And that's how it works.
And it's the same for both of you in that regard.
Yes, we both feel that sensation. So I'll feel him start to come in, or he'll kind of like make his presence a little bit more known. And then I go, oh, he probably wants to say something. And then I'll let go of the body. And it's a little bit easier when we're talking to each other because we're much more focused on each other and aware. But when talking to other people, it can be a little bit of a challenge because we're trying to be aware of you. And then we're also trying to be aware of each other and trying not to like overtalk each other or, you know, accidentally come in, because then things get really messy.
So when one of you is in the body, where's the other one?
They are in a meditative state. So, sometimes they can be completely removed from the body. So Tristan just left the body completely. Like he just moved outside of it and he reduced his presence in the body completely. So now it's just me. But then if I let go of the body, and okay, so now I'm in the body. It's very jarring too, because you're going from a state where you don't have access to the senses and you're very much in this very strange state of consciousness. And then you're coming back into the physical world. So it's jarring for us. Cause the other person can literally just drop the body on the other person. And then they have to deal with this in their immediate surroundings and have to take in everything that's going on. So it's definitely overwhelming.
Is it possible that you could both leave the body at the same time?
Yes, we can, but then the body just flops on the floor. Yeah. So we can both reduce presence, but it's sort of just like laying down or being reduced. And if we do it while standing, the body just will crumple, just falls onto the floor.
But so, I assume the autonomic functions continue.
Yeah, autonomic functions continue. So the body, although we do have issues where the other person might not be aware of. So like, for example, if I'm walking up a hill and I'm like, you know, physically exerting myself and then I give the body to Tristan, it'll feel like he feels like he's suffocating. So he'll be like, I can't breathe. I don't understand why, because he wasn't the one exerting that physical sensation. So there is some tie into the autonomical functions, that we have to be aware of, because we can suffocate each other. We can cause each other to experience like physical symptoms that are very uncomfortable if we switch the body at inopportune times.
Obviously, it's a gradual process. There was a 8-year period when you, Annika, first entered into the body, and Christian only became very gradually aware of your presence at all, and you only became gradually aware of yourself as a person, I gather.
Yes. So for me, of course, coming into this situation, I didn't really have anything to describe it. I didn't understand anything. And I very much had like a childlike mind where I was just like, you know, I liked certain things, I didn't like certain things. And I kind of navigated my life like that. And I really wasn't aware that this wasn't a normal thing. I didn't know that I didn't understand society. And so I kind of had to grow like a child would over the course of like, you know, 8 years until I had full control over the body. And then when he left, I really struggled because I had so much fewer experience than he did. Like I just was not experienced with people or society or the way things are structured. And so I made a lot of not the best choices and was very naive and very innocent. And it was a real struggle. It was a really big challenge.
But you had the wherewithal to undergo a gender change.
Yes, because I did want the body to reflect me. And I think we were also both confused because he was aware that I was a girl, like around, I think I was like six, seven, eight, he became aware that I was female, and he was like, was very confused about it. And so we started making changes, if you want to comment on that. Yeah. One of the things was, is that she was really happy. And that's kind of the trail that I followed, is that by starting to do little changes like makeup or, you know, shirts or things like that or clothing, she expressed that she was happy, that she enjoyed these things. So I kept doing more and more because I wanted to make her happy. I wanted to make her comfortable. I wanted to live alongside her. Even though I wasn't completely aware of what was going on and the full ramifications of it, I was aware that there was some sort of component. And I did see her for a time as me, because I had no understanding of this otherwise. But I was wrong, because then eventually my consciousness left and I lost 5 years, and I started losing more and more time as she took over the body. At first it was just hours, and I used to keep a track, a log of every hour of my life, just because I started noticing I'd lose an hour. Then I started losing 2 hours. Then I started losing half a day. Then I started losing days and then weeks. And eventually I lost a month and realized, oh my God, I'm dying. I had no other words, no other understanding for it. To me, it was dying. You were leaving this reality. You were leaving this world.
And you had no control over it.
No control over it.
It was as if she was more powerful than you were.
Yeah, it was that she was happy. She was enjoying life. She was socializing. And we can fight over the body. It's not necessarily, if we were not loving and compassionate towards each other, it would be a fight over who has control over the body. And there's been times where we've had disagreements, and where it has been a little bit of a struggle, and it's not enjoyable because we're equals. We're 100% equal. She has an equal amount of control over the body as I do. So you're wrestling, basically two souls wrestling over a single body, and that just doesn't work. You can't function like that. And so, you know, have compassion and love for one another, and we've made it work for each other and have kind of turned the body into a timeshare.
If you didn't have that love for each other, it would be like a prison.
Yeah, it would be like a prison. It would be very much in service to self. It would be someone trying to subjugate the other person and trying to tell them what their reality is and who they are. And, you know, because it becomes a mental game at that point. And you're trying to convince the other person, oh, you know, maybe like you're not real, or you're not an actual person. You're not a human being. You're just a component of me. Like there's lots of different ways to approach a situation like this, but Tristan is a very loving person. He's, you know, if you want to talk about it, yeah. So my mom named me after a veterinarian in this one book called All Creatures, Great and Small. And she instilled in me compassion towards all living beings, all living everything, including, you know, and then I was also raised on Star Trek, and, you know, to seek out new life and new civilizations and the moral ramifications, the ethical ramifications of being in situations that are unfamiliar. And so when I realized the situation I was in and realized the moral and ethical ramifications of my choices, I made them as a person who wants to help others and do the right thing and be conscious of all living beings. And she's a living being, so I had to adapt.
There was this character in Star Trek: The Next Generation. I think they called her a symbiote.
Yes. Oh, okay. So that's Jadzia Dax from Deep Space Nine.
Okay.
And yes, she was kind of my hero, because, you know, she actually had, you know, because she had that symbiote in her, that symbiote like lived multiple lives through other people, and they became like this intertwined relationship. And so, yeah, absolutely.
It's sort of one way to think about your current situation.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Only it's hard to tell who is the symbiote. Tristan had that body all to himself for at least 22 years.
Yes, I had it to myself for 22 years. And at 22, she was very small. So she was just basically very, very tiny. So I was barely noticeable. And then over the course of 8 years, she became stronger, had learned more, had interacted with the world more. And eventually she was able to take over. So it felt more like I had 25 to 29 years of experience with the body, and then
died, and then, you know, she took over.
And the interesting thing to me is that when you died and she had sole control of the body for approximately 5 years, and you came back after 5 years, for you it was like instantly you were dead. And I mean, you don't have any recollection of the intervening 5 years.
No, I don't. For me, it was like jumping through time. I like to say it was like a Back to the Future moment where all of a sudden I wasn't aware of the pandemic. I wasn't aware of the political situation in the country. I wasn't aware of anything. And I was incredibly confused. I didn't even know the place that I was in. I was like, I was in a strange home that wasn't mine, that was decorated. And I struggled so much with trying to understand my reality because of that jump. It just, nothing made sense. And it took us time over the course of just the first year to kind of make sense of it and for me to kind of understand and get caught up on current events. And I went basically from the Obama administration to the Biden administration, missed all of Trump. And so I had a lot of catching up to do, which I did very gently. I kind of eased him into the political situation. And I had to tell him, like, listen, we have to wear masks. It's a pandemic. And it was a very stressful situation. Yeah. And the other thing, too, was that 5 years is a long time, especially when you're, you know, she was growing and learning. So when I came back, she was very much a stranger to me. So I didn't know the kind of person she had become. I didn't know who she had grown into. It was like, you know somebody, then you see them 5 years later, you don't really know what kind of person they're going to be. And so I was afraid too that, you know, she might hurt me or she might, you know, I don't know, mentally, you know, I wasn't sure, manipulate me or something like that. And so.
And furthermore, the body wasn't the same.
Yeah, the body wasn't the same either. And I struggled with walking. I struggled with just moving the body, navigating it, and also society no longer saw me as a man. And so I also had to adapt to how the rest of society and other people saw me. And for the first time in my life, I was a ghost. They always tend to see Annika first, and they think, you know, I must be either not real or I'm some sort of just a voice. But no, I'm a real person who lived my life, as myself. And then all of a sudden, now I was, only Annika was being seen, and I was sort of a disembodied spirit. That has been one of the most difficult things, because I became much more isolated because I couldn't go out and make friends. You know, a family had to learn about this. It was a very difficult thing. And that's how she felt. So I kind of understand how, yeah, that was the thing that I really struggled with when I took over the body, was that people were used to, so Tristan's friends knew Tristan, but they didn't know me. And so they were confused. His family was confused. And they were also grieving him too, because on a sort of spiritual or psychological level, they knew that I wasn't him, but they didn't have the words or the understanding to be able to navigate that. And so they were grieving the death of somebody, but there was no body to bury. So it became a really difficult challenge for everyone, and not just us.
Well, let's go to the point in time when Tristan disappeared or died, as he puts it. At that point, you're in sole control of the body, Annika. Did you have Tristan's memories?
No. And the other thing, too, is you don't know what you don't know. So sometimes I would think, oh, well, I know that Tristan may have done this, but I wouldn't know how to do it. Or I wouldn't know, like, certain social norms or certain aspects of society. I wasn't aware. So I was just ignorant of things. So, yeah, I don't have his memories. Some memories we share because we were both there at the same time. But if you're not here, if you're not in the body, if you're not experiencing it, you don't have the memories of it.
So 22 years of life that he lived before you showed up at all, Tristan has those memories and you do not.
Yeah, like, yeah, so I went to high school, you know, had a relationship. I went through just normal 22 years of being a male and living my life. And that did not translate onto her at all. Yeah, I don't know what it's like to go to high school. I don't know what it's like to have like a normal childhood. From my perspective, what I experienced was my childhood, and I didn't know anything different. And so when I was thrown out into the world, because the body was an adult, I was seen as an adult. So it was really like a do or die situation, sink or swim. You either have to,
you know, adapt to your situation and survive, or you don't. And that was the challenge I faced.
And if I recall, Tristan was earning a living as a software engineer.
Yeah, exactly. And she didn't know how to do that.
I didn't even consider the idea that I could go to college and get an education because I just wasn't aware of it. It took me about like right at the end of those 5 years, I started having an idea of like, oh, college, I could go to college. I could get educated. And then all of a sudden I was like, well, I could learn STEM. And I started studying like multiplication tables. I started studying like division. I started going on websites and try to like get like a kind of go through high school, like an abridged course. And I was looking for courses just so that I could prepare myself for college. Because I wanted to do something more with my life. I wanted to help others.
You have good language skill.
And I love people. I'm a people person. I'm an extrovert. I love people. So I wanted to talk and interface with people.
I'm more of an introvert. People aren't really my thing. So now she handles all the social situations, which is nice from my perspective. But at the same time, it is a little bit lonely. Mm-hmm.
Well, you're able to switch back and forth very quickly.
Yeah, it was learned. Yeah, mm-hmm. It was a process.
So that was part of the struggle you went through, is to understand how you could do that.
Yeah.
So when she first came into the body, the switches took a much longer period of time because we weren't aware of what was going on. We weren't used to feeling each other. And of course, society doesn't see this as a real thing. So you don't have anything to fall back on to understand this process. So it would take maybe a few minutes and all of a sudden I'd feel like, oh, what just happened? I don't understand. I lost some time there. You know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, what happened? Why am I suddenly in the kitchen now? It was very disjointed and jarring, but we still hadn't learned what was going on at that point. When I came back, she'd spent 5 years, full control of the body, totally used to having it. And so suddenly we were kind of fighting over the body initially, just because we were kind of unaware of how to do it. And we were glitching, we were, rocking, we were ticking. The brain was under an incredible amount of stress because we weren't doing it correctly, basically. We were just, the body was very much disabled during that time period.
Now, this is where I think it gets really interesting because most normal people, like I'm a normal person, I don't think about my body that much.
Right.
It's like I'm not aware particularly, am I focusing on this finger or this hand and not this hand, or one part of the brain and not another part of the brain. But I gather, as you've described it to me earlier, you are very much aware of each part of the body. And sometimes you're both sharing different parts of the body at the same time.
Exactly, exactly. We're really aware, and we had to be, because otherwise the body becomes disabled. If we both try to take over the body and we're not like actively trying to share it, it definitely becomes disabled. It becomes torturous for the both of us to even be in the body, because the body is so, there's just too much going on. There's conflicting signals being sent to different body parts. There's conflicting parts of the brain too. And we're also very aware of what parts of the brain that we're in as well. And we've had to just become aware in order to survive this. So like, I'm aware when he's in a certain part of the brain, and we can help each other navigate to different parts of the brain, or have a higher percentage of presence in different areas of the brain. So it has been just a process of a sort of a trial by fire. You just have to learn this in order to survive.
I'm under the impression from what you're saying that there are probably individuals in mental hospitals right now who are experiencing what you describe, glitches and tics.
Absolutely.
And from the outside, it seems like this person has become catatonic or dysfunctional in some way completely, but they're having the same struggle that you successfully navigated, and probably, I'm going to guess, maybe only one pair of individuals in 100 can navigate it successfully the way you have.
Right. There's tons of people out there that don't know, like, because doctors don't understand this. They're not even sure if it's real. There's not a lot of studies done on this topic. So there are people right now struggling with this, struggling to navigate it. And so, like, what's really been interesting is when we're out and talking to people, people will come up to us and be like, hey, I think I'm in a similar situation. I haven't told anyone about this and I'm really struggling with it. Do you have, like, advice? How do you switch? How do you do this? And just to see the improvement in their lives when learning about this and learning like how we've navigated it has really, really helped a lot of people, which is why we want to be more open about this, why we want to share our experiences, because the medical community needs to know about this. They need to understand consciousness in a different way. They need to start looking at it a bit differently, because otherwise you do end up with people catatonic or not able to hold a job or not able to survive in society or, you know, disowned by family because they're struggling with this switching process that they may not even be aware of. So it's way more common than people think. It's way more common. So,
and to my understanding, in the literature of what is now called dissociative identity disorder, there isn't anything about two, as they call them in the literature, alters switching back and forth so rapidly. It's just not known.
Yeah, it's not known to do rapid switching, and they tend to view it as if you're rapid switching, you're in some sort of traumatic situation that is triggering the brain trying to protect itself, which isn't our case at all.
Because we'll switch for, like, to eat individual Skittles, like our favorite flavors of food and things like that. So it's like there's no triggering happening that's leading to this. We're just sharing the body as you would anything else. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the other thing about alters too is this is just us personally, but we find it sort of dehumanizing to use the word alters or systems because it removes that human element. So we prefer, you know, soul. We prefer seeing each other, you know, as actual human beings, real people, because that's what we are. You know, I spent my whole life as a real human being and then all of a sudden now I'm an alter. It takes away that human aspect. Mm-hmm. And it makes it very easy for you to abuse yourself and to abuse the person you're living with and sharing the body with. And that's just us. Some people prefer those terms, but for us, it's like that was one of the first things we were like, this just doesn't work for us.
From your point of view, you are two souls,
yes,
inhabiting one body.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we can't see it. That's the hard thing to convey to other people too, is because they're used to seeing a body and thinking one person, you know? And meanwhile, we're two fully formed souls, two individual people. And it's hard to communicate to that to the outside world, which is so attached to a body being a person. Mm-hmm. And when it's really more complicated than that.
And although I gather you've gone through years of struggle, serious struggle, you would consider yourself at this point happy and well-adjusted.
Yes, we love each other very much.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we have a normal home life. You know, it's like we wake up in the morning, we make breakfast together, we work together, we do everything. We love each other. We love our situation, and we wouldn't change it for the world. Yeah, we're very happy.
Well, I think that's the key. I remember in my freshman psychology class, they said the very first definition of mental illness is that a mentally ill person is unhappy.
Yes. You need to have love, compassion, forgiveness. You need to embody these things and treat other people as you would want to be treated. That's foundational. That's mm-hmm. key.
I think you would agree with me that whatever is going on here, it's not a question of mental illness at this point, although maybe at one time it could have been thought of that way.
Yeah, in the same way that you could say like a disorder, it makes your life disorderly or hard to live. Mm-hmm. We don't view this as a disorder. We don't view this as an illness. This is just, you know, our life. This is just normal for us now. And we're happy. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I think we each individually struggle with different things. Like I've dealt with anxiety, I've dealt with depression, and I know Tristan's dealt with depression at times. Yeah, it's like we can still have our individual struggles with, say, you know, like mental illness, like with depression or something. I really struggled with the reality of my situation and being depressed, not having friends or not being able to talk to people and feeling isolated, and that caused some tension in our lives. So we can individually have different
illnesses or disorders, but we help each other. We help each other work through those problems, and try to be aware of when someone's slipping or having anxiety and trying to calm them down. So it's like we just help each other.
And you've learned how to work together as partners.
Yes. Yep. Absolutely.
How do you do that?
I think what Tristan was saying, it's love, it's compassion, it's, you know, it's so easy to get lost in your own head and see only things from your perspective. And you have to go, well, this person feels this way. I really need to really think about why they feel that way or why they may be, you know, struggling, and really just have that heart and that compassion and realize like that's what it's all about. It's about love. It's about spiritual growth. It's about learning. And really having the patience to say, how can I help you? What do you need? How can I be there for you? And then following through with that and really being aware of the other person, because otherwise, you know, they're going to suffer, you're going to suffer, and it helps nobody.
Well, what does it feel like if, let's say, you're Annika in one part of the brain and Tristan is sort of in a different part of the same brain?
Mm-hmm.
What is that like? Is it possible to put it into language?
Like, for example, like one of us can end up becoming a little bit more paranoid than the other person. So we're like, you know, like, for example, I might be like worried about like how I see myself or what I think about other people or like how other people perceive me. And Tristan, you know, he's not in that part of the brain and he can recognize that I'm, you know, struggling or I'm caught in a loop inside of one part of the brain. And he's like, he slowly says, hey, you need to move yourself out of this part of the brain, or he makes room for himself in another part of the brain and allows me to move into it, which is really, really helpful because it's immediately calming. One person can be very, very high and the other person can be very not high at all and can be very, you know, very aware and very critically thinking and everything, while the other person is just completely loopy because they get caught in whatever part of the brain that's affecting. And meanwhile, the other person is kind of avoiding that area of the brain. And so you end up with this very strange dynamic. And then we can exchange it by going into different parts of the brain. And even with different, you know, frequencies or different thoughts, it's like we have to become aware of these things because at first, I had never smoked my entire life. I'd never had marijuana before. When I came back, Annika really enjoyed marijuana, so she would smoke. And then we would just start trading it back and forth, and that didn't make any sense to us. We couldn't understand how this was happening or how one person seemed to be logically thinking and able to process things and navigate very well, and the other person was just totally high and out and, you know, dealing with munchies or whatever. And slowly we learned, hey, there's parts of the brain that we need to navigate and that I can make room for you or she can make room for me. And so it's been just a process of learning just how that works.
Because you use the metaphor of space as if there's some sense of spatial location that involves different states of consciousness.
Yes. There is. You can definitely be in different states of consciousness. You could be in different states of thought. And in that sense, it's like you're in that part of the brain. And if one of us is in that part of the brain, we are taking up like physical space. Just like I can be in an arm, it's like he can, you know, if he comes in, like then the arm isn't going to work as well. So sometimes we'll, you know, we try to avoid each other at times in the brain just so that we don't clash. Because if we both go into the brain completely at the same time, it will glitch out and it'll tick and then it'll try to reset itself because it's getting like, I don't know, conflicting waves, conflicting electrical signals. And the brain just is like, it's like error. And then it just glitches us out and tries to calm that side of the brain. So it's interesting.
Can you, like, for example, one of you control one hand and the other person control the other hand?
Yeah, we can. Yeah, if you okay, so like if I have this hand and I have this one. Okay, so this is so stupid, but you know, if I go, it's stupid. It's so ridiculous. But yeah, we can control individual parts of the body, and you know, it's not as super clear because you can get confused. It's very easy because the thing that you have to do is you have to be able to go into a meditative state either in that body part or not. Well, another, a better example than the stupid head padding, stomach rubbing one is that we cuddle. We like, we'll, she'll take an arm, I'll take an arm, and then we just like, we'll hold each other and we'll just like lay in bed. And it's no different than like, we've both had partners. It's no different than laying there with a partner. You can feel them and the arm feels foreign to you. It's, you know, it's not your arm. So you're laying there in bed, just, you're just hugging. And so we hug all the time. We cuddle. We can be physical with each other because we can trade pieces of the body and just sort of curl up, and it feels wonderful. It's no different than any, than anyone else.
So at this point, neither of you is interested in a different romantic relationship than what you.
No, we're super content with just each other. Yeah. We live together. We live life together. I can't even imagine bringing somebody into that because they would be dealing with entering like a three-person relationship. And that would just, it'd be extremely complicated. And we're also happy with each other. We wouldn't want to do that. Yep. We're very content.
And you're also able to hold down a job.
Yes. Yeah. We hold down a job. Obviously, you know, we can't like, society isn't ready for this, so we aren't open about it, but we are able to hold down a job and one that's pretty stressful, high intense. It's intense. It's, mm-hmm. it's a lot of mental work for it. And yeah, so it's, we do good. And the nice thing about that too is that she's able to handle the people side of things while I'm able to handle the more analytical side of things, which is really nice, and that we're, you know, two heads are better than one, they say. So, and it's, I think it's true.
How about reading? Do you read books?
Yeah, we read books, but it tends to be like who's ever interested in the book ends up reading it, and the other person either doesn't pay attention or like will listen to the other person reading it. So you can, or, you know, sometimes Tristan will read books to me and, you know, he'll do the voices and stuff, you know, like some of my fondest memories are him like reading The Hobbit to me and things like that. And it's really fun. And then the other cool thing about it too is that you can see the other person's mental images while they're reading. So it's not like you're just hearing their voice. You're also seeing their mental image and you're also having like a mental image of your own, which can get a little complicated because they end up getting overlaid or taking up the same amount of space. But it's really fascinating because the sensation that you get from that is almost like you're hallucinating because you know it's not your thoughts and you're seeing things that you can't control. So it's this other person controlling what you're seeing in the mind's eye, which is fascinating and amazing because they can surprise you and you go, well, you really think that? You know, that really looks like that to you? And, you know, it's a really source. It's fun.
So yeah. It's a kind of telepathy.
Yeah, I would see it very much like telepathy. It very much feels like that. You can share concepts, you can share pictures, you can share entire ideas with each other. That doesn't mean the other person's going to understand it. You know, they have to interpret it within their framework, their mental space, their life, their memories. It all kind of ties in. So you can share things with that person on a very telepathic level, but it's going to be up to that person to kind of interpret it to some degree.
And at the same time, this is what I find fascinating. You have this telepathic access to each other, but you also prefer much of the time, maybe most of the time, if you're going to communicate, to do it verbally. You speak out loud to mm-hmm. each other.
Yeah, because when you are like, the thing is like as human beings, there's so many steps before you talk. Like just even talking with you, I have to think about like, okay, what you've said. I have to kind of internalize that. I have to like visualize it a little bit. I have to kind of put it within my context. I have to do all of this mental work before I'm ready to talk. It happens very fast, but there's this thought process taking place before I speak. The issue with us is that we have access to the whole process. So we can hear the other person thinking it through, deciding on what they choose. And they might go down different possibilities. Oh, I might say this. Oh, I might say that. And you end up getting, if you just communicated that way, you would become very confused because you'd be like, oh, why did you think this or that? And then, you know, you have to talk it out because once it comes out of you, it's like you've processed it. You've put it to words. You've gone through this mental, you know, process that allows you to communicate. And so, especially like if we're talking about something very serious, or even just like, I don't know, we just prefer to have that communication verbally because it really solidifies what the other person is thinking rather than guessing what the other person is thinking. Mm-hmm. So it's complicated.
There's so much more to talk about. For example, when, let's say, Tristan is out of the body,
right?
Annika. If you have control of the body completely and Tristan is out of the body, you notice that he's to your right or to your left or in front of you or behind you.
Yes. So when this happens, if like, say, I leave the body, and which I'll do,
and so I can see him. So like visually, he's over there right now. Now, what he's really doing is he's kind of making me hi. He's making me hallucinate a little bit. So he's like going into the mind's eye and projecting that outwards. So I know he's in a part of the brain that deals with that. So I know he may not be like physically there and that he's lowered his presence in all the other areas of the brain and he's just focusing on constructing himself there. So it's like he can't like leave and go into another room and read a piece of paper and, you know, in a sort of weird remote viewing situation. It doesn't work like that. But it's really nice being able to see each other and have that conversation. There's another component to it too, is like we can look off, and the nice thing about, like, for example, like if I'm turning this way and I'm looking towards her, I'm actually looking into her eyes, but we're both over top of each other. So we can look into each other's eyes by looking at the same point in space, because we're both there and we're both in the eyeballs, so we can see each other. And it's actually much easier to communicate with each other when we're actually looking into each other's eyes. Mm-hmm.
So it's not as if you're skilled in bilocation.
Right. And we haven't really like messed around with that because there's already so many challenges that we're facing. We're not ready to start astral traveling or bilocating and things like that. And we don't know how it works. So we're still new to this. It's only been a couple years. So we're still trying to figure things out and understanding how far does it go? What's it like?
Well, we did have like an out of body experience at one point, but we became so frightened when we both left the body and it was more like being like up towards the ceiling or leaving it that we immediately went back into the body with like a thud. And it was actually like really frightening and we haven't done it since. Mm-hmm. So there's more to it that we haven't explored. And we've just, cause our main focus is just being comfortable with life and comfortable with each other and comfortable with our relationship.
Which is difficult enough.
Yeah, exactly. It's unbelievably difficult. So it's like that's been our focus.
Although I recall you did experiment with remote viewing.
We did. And we had a lot of success at it too. Really super accurate things where I'm like, it's a, you know, like we're drawing it out and I'm like, there's definitely fire. I feel heat. And sure enough, it was a fire in a desert. And I was like, oh my gosh. So but it's a very different process. You're dealing with intuition. You're dealing with whatever comes to you immediately and kind of relying on trusting your instinct on it, and not getting lost in thinking about it. And it's one of the nice things about our situation is that in order to trade the body, we have to go into meditative states. Mm-hmm. So like, if I leave the body, I have to go into a meditative state where I'm not thinking everything. I'm completely relaxed and I'm just leaving. And now she's given the body to me and I was in a deeper meditative state. So she's going behind me and basically leaving the body on me and I'm able to come through it and increase my presence. So I'm coming out of the meditative state. So we got really good at meditating because we're always having to meditate. We don't have a choice. If we want to trade the body, one person needs to go into a meditative state, leave the body, leave the brain, and the other person has to step forward and go into it.
And you're able to do that really rapidly.
Yep, really quickly. Because we've gotten really good. We've learned like one person can be at a certain percentage in the body and the other person can go back and forth like in front of them, behind them, in front of them, behind them. Or, you know, that person might go behind and then you kind of come up and then they start doing that. So we can train the body in different ways just by adjusting how deep our meditation is and being aware of where the other person is in their meditation.
Although you haven't practiced bilocation or astral travel, you're pretty good at meditating.
Yes, meditating.
Mm-hmm. And yep. Which has basically gotten you to where you are now.
Yep, exactly.
It's through meditation.
Yep.
So this is something psychiatry has barely an understanding of.
Right. Well, I think what gave us a really unique advantage is that, you know, you have to be really aware of your thoughts. You have to be. Because if you're, you know, paranoid or you're in fear or you're thinking. And so you have to be aware of like, oh, I'm actually taking up a lot of space in the brain because I'm continuously thinking about this thing. So I need to try and silence those thoughts. So you have someone to kind of bounce your meditation off of. Because the results are very clear. So we ended up getting really, really, really good at it just from having that second person to meditate with and understand. Because she can also point out, hey, listen, you keep thinking about this. It's driving me crazy. You know, all I hear, or when like a song gets stuck in one of our heads. Yeah, that's the worst. Because you can't stop them from having the song stuck in their head. And you have to try and make them aware of it.
Mm.
Yep. It's a challenge. Yeah.
Well, and I understand you like to play games together.
Yes, we're huge board game aficionados. Right now we're playing Frosthaven and Gloomhaven. So we play really complicated board games, and we prefer cooperative games versus competitive games, because competitive games are very isolating. You know, you've got your cards, you're holding them up, you're trying to not let the opponent think what you're thinking, versus with cooperative games, you're both there trying to work towards solving something. And one of the nice things about, say, a board game where you have two characters is we get to experience both having a body in some sense. So if my character can go into one room and get a treasure chest, and her character can go off and fight monsters, and we have this, it's almost like we get to kind of be normal for a little bit, mm-hmm. and we get to both have bodies and navigate this fantasy world.
So these are role-playing games.
Yeah, they're role-playing games.
Oh, I see.
Yep. Okay. It's really fun.
And I think one of the most interesting things, I'm going to ask you to do this, is I know you play the guitar together. You can actually sing duets.
Yeah, we're both musicians. We both love music. Tristan, he learned how to play the banjo. I learned how to play guitar. And then when he came back, I taught him guitar enough. And then we realized that it also helped us with our switching, because here we were trying to trade not only the brain, but also trying to trade the hands and the arms while trying to keep a tempo, while trying to play the style that we do, because we play guitar completely differently. Like, we have two completely different styles of playing that we enjoy. So it became this process of how do you let go of the body and give it to the other person while allowing them to continue playing the instrument while they're behind you. It became this really complicated
process. Not to miss a beat.
Yes, and not to miss a beat, or to not accidentally, you know, come in and mess up the other person's ability to recall the lyrics too, because that was one of the things we struggled with, is the other person would come in and mess up the other person's ability to remember the lyrics, or would accidentally blank out the short-term memory. So it became this sort of a really fun way to practice switching the body.
Well, what I'd like to do is ask you, we'll take a little break and go get the guitar, and we can conclude this interview with a duet. Can we do that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sure. Okay. Yeah, we'd love to.
Great. Okay, we're back. We've got the cameras back on and the mics mm-hmm. on. And so you're sitting here with the guitar. And as you explained, this is one of your disciplines in a way.
Yes, yeah.
Playing the guitar mm-hmm. together helped you to develop harmony.
Absolutely, harmony. That's a perfect way to describe it. It became sort of this thing where I've always loved guitar. I love writing songs. And so does Tristan. And so, you know, like we talked about, like, he originally learned the banjo. And then when he came back, I had learned how to play the guitar in the meantime while he was gone. And then slowly I helped him learn guitar. And then we started using this as sort of a therapeutic way, but a way to bond with each other. Because music is, you know, it's the great unifier. It's wonderful to play with other people. So we slowly learned how to trade the guitar back and forth while trading the body, while trading the vocal cords. And it became this process. Now, at first, we were terrible, and we would glitch out the brain, we'd glitch out the body. And we had to learn how to do this over time. So it's been a process. Okay, so I can go into it. So if I have the body, so this is my style of playing. We have two different styles of playing. So the first style, mine is basically like this. So I play the guitar like this. So I have the body. I'm just playing the guitar. And, you know, I don't know it as well, so mine isn't too complicated. I'm just strumming. And then if she takes over the body, I'm going to give it to her now.
And I have the body, and I have the guitar, but I'm going to give it back to him.
So that's how we do it, switching it back and forth. And there's a lot of challenges to it, but we've made it work, and it's now one of our favorite things. So this is a song we wrote together that talks about our situation. So you ready to do it? Yeah, and we're going to look at each other because it's easier for us to sort of visualize it.
Because we looking into each other's eyes, it's like we're playing to each other. So it helps relax us and calms us. And it's like, hey, I'm singing to you. I'm singing with you.
Yeah, it's nice. All right, you ready?
Yep, let's do it.
All right, here we go. I didn't want to start.
Anywhere.
Okay. So I'll start.
Okay.
And I didn't have no folks to guide me so. Child so wild, the devil left me alone. Oh, bless your soul.
Can you believe I'm here with you and you're here with me? And can you feel me relying on you as you're relying on me? I don't know how, but you're hearing my sound. And I don't know how I ever lived.
It's okay. Listen, it might take a few takes.
I'm just nervous.
I know. It's okay, though. You got this. You got this. You're going to be fine.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Let's try it again. All right.
Okay. From the top.
All right.
And I didn't have no folks to guide me so. A child so wild, death left me alone. Bless your soul.
And can you believe I'm here with you and you're here with me? And can you feel me relying on you as you're relying on me? And I don't know how, but you're hearing my sound. I don't know how I ever lived without
you.
You,
you,
you.
And all them kids, well, they grew and bloomed, but me,
you're late.
Tried leaving town, but my town, well, it left me, or so it seemed.
You and you're here with me, and can you feel me relying on you as you're relying on me? And I don't know how, but you're hearing my sound, and I don't know how I ever lived without
you.
You,
you. For my sin, I reckon I had to atone. Sky fell in and the water washed my bones down the road.
And can you believe I'm here with you and you're here with me? And can you feel me relying on you as you're relying on me? And I don't know how, but you're hearing my sound.
Flies high, the desert hawk that soars, red before.
Can you believe I'm here with you and you're here with me? And can you feel me relying on you as you're relying on me? And I don't know how, but you're hearing my sound. And I don't know how I am. ready? Let's do it together.
All right, we're going to both play the guitar at the same time with each other. Sorry, I'm going to step on your toes. And I don't know how I feel this way. And I don't know if it's you or the time of day that's making me strange. Can you believe I'm here with you and you're here with me? And can you feel me relying on you as you're relying on me? I don't know how, but you're hearing my sound. That's pretty good.
Amazing.
Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And you're very talented.
Thank you. Yeah, a lot of practice, a lot of it not working out, but it's really enjoyable. It's a way for us to bond, and the best part is we can feel each other's emotions. So it's a very emotional process. It's really nice. Did you want to try it one more time? So that way there's two takes. Yeah, we can do that if you want. Because I know we went to like the musical part after the second lyric. Would that be all right if we did
sure.
that?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Ready? No, not that song. Okay. Okay. Ready?
Yeah. Let's do it.
Okay.
I didn't have no folks to guide my soul. Child so wild that death left me alone. Bless your soul. And can you believe I'm here with you and you're here with me? And can you feel me relying on you as you're relying on me? I don't know how, but you're hearing my sound. All them kids, well, they grew and bloomed, but me, you're the lady who tried leaving town, but my town, well, it left me, or so it seemed.
Can you believe I'm here with you and you're here with me? And can you feel me relying on you as you're lying?
Sky fell in and the water washed my bones down the road.
Can you believe I'm here with you and you're here with me? Can you feel me relying on you as you're relying on me? I don't know how, but you're hearing my sound. I don't know how I ever live without you.
Catskill eagle swooping within a gorge.
You're the lady who
still flies higher than a desert hawk that soars. Read before.
Want to play together?
Yeah, let's do it.
This way, and I don't know if it's
as you're lying on me. And I don't know how, but you're hearing my sound. And I don't know how I ever lived without you. You. I love you.
I love you too.
That's so wonderful.
Thanks.
That's so wonderful. What a blessing you are.
Thanks.
Yes, we appreciate it. Thank you.
I'm so honored to be able to share what you have achieved with our New Thinking Aloud audience. I think this is a first. And I'm just grateful that you have the courage to come out.
Thank you. And thank you for having us. It's an honor being here on this show, to sit in the chair with so many, where so many greats have sat, and to be across from you. It's surreal. And it's an absolute honor. And we're also so happy to be here and to be able to help others and to share our story so that hopefully things can change for people like us and for the medical system so that, you know, people can start taking consciousness and looking at it in a different light.
The good news is that we're just getting started.
Yep, just getting started.
We have more to go. So thank you for being with me. And for those of you listening or watching, thank you for being with us, because you are the reason that we are here. Book 2 in the New Thinking Aloud Dialogues book series is a tribute to parapsychologist Russell Targ celebrating his 90th birthday. New Thinking Aloud is a non-profit endeavor. Your contributions to the New Thinking Aloud Foundation make a meaningful difference in our ability to produce new videos.